Thank you. We are utilizing. Do I need to start over, or can I just continue here?
You can.
It's
just
up
continue.
To you. If you think that you'd need to, yeah.
I'll just continue. Okay.
Yes.
We are utilizing VAST conference for this remote meeting, and all members of the committee and the staff, state agencies with agenda items, have the ability to communicate contemporaneously during this meeting through this platform, and the public has access to contemporaneously listen and, if necessary, participate in this meeting through dialing the following phone number, 1-800-356-8278, and the six-digit conference code 125563, followed by the pound sign. And second, we are providing public notice of the necessary information for accessing the meeting. We previously gave notice to the public of the necessary information for accessing the meeting telephonically. Instructions have also been provided in the House and Senate calendars, the Fiscal Committee agenda, and the website of the Office of the Legislative Budget Assistant. Three, we are providing a mechanism for the public to alert the public body during the meeting if there are problems with access. If anyone has a problem, please email nheoc@eos.nh.gov. And four, adjourning the meeting if the public is unable to access the meeting. In the event the public is unable to access the meeting will be adjourned and rescheduled. Please note that all votes that are taken during this meeting shall be done by roll call vote. Let's start today by taking the roll of attendance. I do know that Representative Hennessy is subbing today for Representative Ober, and Representative Lovejoy is subbing for Representative Leishman. When each member states their presence, please also state whether there is anyone in the room with you during this meeting, which is required under the Right to Know law. And I will ask Representative Wyler to take the roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wallner.
Here. I'm in at my home in Concord, New Hampshire, and there is no one in the room with me. And
Representative?
Could I just remind people that until they speak, could they please mute their phone? We were getting some background noise. Thank you.
Representative Ford.
Present, and I am at my home in Easton alone.
Representative Wyler is here, and I'm in my home in Kingston. I'm alone in this room. Representative Hennessy.
Representative Hennessy is here. I am in my house in Littleton with my two minor children.
Representative Lovejoy.
Hello, I'm here. I'm at my home in Stratham, and I'm alone in this room.
Senator D'Alessandro. Is Senator D'Alessandro present?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Senator D'Alessandro, Representative Wyler, I'm at home in Manchester, and I'm alone.
Thank you. Senate President Susi.
Good morning. I am at my home in Manchester, and I am alone.
Thank you. Senator Khan.
Here in Keene, the room by myself.
Senator Rosenwald.
Good morning. I'm sitting at my dining room table, and I am all by myself.
Senator Morse.
Senator Chuck Morse, I'm at my office in Atkinson, and I'm alone.
Thank you. Madam Chair, 10 members present.
So now moving into the agenda and the acceptance of the minutes of May 8th and May 28th. And are there any corrections to the minutes? Hearing no corrections, could I have a motion on the acceptance of the minutes?
Sue Ford moves acceptance.
Second,
Representative Ford moves acceptance, and a representative, Senator Susie, second, and that is the acceptance of the minutes of May 8th and May 28th. And I will ask Representative Weiler to take the roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ford.
Yes.
Representative Weiler votes yes, although I was not present at one of them. Representative Hennessy.
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy.
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Senate President Susie.
Yes.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
10-1. 10-0.
10-0. You almost had an extra person there. Thank you, Representative Weiler. And the motion passes 10-0. And we'll move on to old business. We have tabled an item, and then we do have our audit. And what I would suggest on the audits is that we have probably in the early fall or maybe late summer, we'll have just an audit meeting when we can be sure that we have all the audits available and have a discussion of just the audits, if that meets with everyone's approval. Any other motions for this area of old business? Hearing none, we'll move on to our first consent calendar. This is tab 4. I know we don't have our books, but it is tab 4. There are a number of items on this consent calendar. Are there any that someone would like to take off? Does anyone have an item they want to remove from the consent calendar? Hearing no motions to take any items off the consent calendar. Could I have a motion to accept the consent calendar?
I would move the consent calendar, item 4.
Thank you, Senator D'Alessandro.
Second.
Senator D'Alessandro moved. And
Rosenwald.
Who did that?
It was
and
Rosenwald.
Senator Rosenwald second. And could I ask the could I ask Representative Weiler to call the roll?
Representative Ford.
Yes.
Representative Weiler votes yes. Representative Hennessy.
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy.
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Senate President Susie.
Yes.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
Madam Chair, the vote is 10-0.
Thank you, Representative Weiler. The motion passes 10-0. Consent calendar accepted. And now we'll move into tab 5. And this, again, is a consent calendar. There are several items on this consent calendar. Are there any that people would like to have come off and have discussion about? Hearing Hearing no requests to remove items off the consent calendar. Could I have a motion to accept the consent calendar?
I would move the consent.
Senator D'Alessandro moves. And
any second.
And is that Representative Hennessy?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Hennessy, second. And I'll ask the clerk to take the roll.
I'm writing the names down. Okay. Representative Ford.
Yes.
Representative Weiler votes yes. Representative Hennessy.
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy.
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Senate President Susi.
Yes.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
Madam Chair, the vote is 10 to 0.
Motion passes 10 to 0. Moving on now to consent calendar 6. There are two items on this. Is there a request to take one of those off and deal with it individually?
Yes.
Yes, there is. Which item would you like?
Item 103, please.
Okay. Senator Kahn asked that we take up item 103, which is Department of Education. Why don't we move the other item, which is Office of Professional Licensure and Certification. Is there a motion on that item?
I would move that item.
Ford.
D'Alessandro seconds.
Okay, Representative Ford moves and Senator D'Alessandro seconds. Any discussion of that item? Hearing none, I will ask the clerk to take the roll.
Representative Ford.
Yes.
Representative Weiler votes yes. Representative Hennessy.
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy.
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Senator Susi.
Yes.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
Madam Chair, the vote is 10 to 0.
Motion passes 10 to 0. Thank you, Representative Weiler. And our item that we'd like to discuss is item number 2103. This is a Department of Education item. It authorizes to accept and expend $1.9 million in federal funds and to establish positions. Do we have someone from the Department of Education with us?
Representative, I have a question.
Yes.
Caitlin Davis has her hand raised. I can unmute her line.
I'm sorry, who has her hand raised?
Caitlin Davis.
Oh, great. Caitlin, yes, that's who we need. Thank you.
Hello,
no
can
problem.
You guys hear me?
Caitlin, please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Good morning. For the record, this is Caitlin Davis. I'm a director at the Department of Education of the Division of Education Analytics and Resources. And one of the areas that I oversee is the Bureau of Education Statistics, which will be implementing this grant.
Thank you. Thank you, Caitlin, for coming today. And does the committee have questions for Ms. Davis?
Yes, Madam. This is
Senator Kahn.
Shall I proceed, Madam Chair?
Yes, please. Yes.
start from the position of I fully support what the department wishes to do with the statewide longitudinal data system. I congratulate them on their application and their successful award of a three-year grant. My question for Ms. Davis as a representative of the department is the department's in receipt of, we heard this week, 56,000 surveys on remote learning and the requests of 176 different districts for some CARES Act money that is supporting the use of remote learning. And what I'm wondering is this data from both the school districts and parents, citizens around the state who've completed the survey, it represents quite a treasure trove of information that could benefit policy development and the legislature down the road. So I wanted to take this opportunity to inquire what will be the opportunity for the department to share that information with the fiscal committee or the education committees of the legislature in the future.
So, Caitlin Davis, this is Frank Edelblue, the Commissioner of Education, and that question doesn't really have to do with the SLDS grant, so it might be better if I jump in and respond to that, Senator Kahn, if I may.
Perfect. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So the question is around the data that has been obtained through a survey that was conducted of parents, teachers, and school administrative leaders around the state relative to our work in the START Task Force, which is the School Transition, Reopening, and Redesign Task Force. That is a task force that's made up of, just for context, Senator Kahn, for the other folks on the phone, that is a task force that's made up of about 60 representatives, a broad cross-section of constituencies who are represented. They are broken into individual work groups that are focused on specific domains related to the reopening, whether that is instruction or technology or student wellness or operations associated with the school. We are using an organization to help facilitate that work, which is the Region 1 Comprehensive Center. It is a federally funded advisory resource to SEAs and LEAs across the country. It is run by AIR, which is the vendor that the U.S. Department of Education has contracted to do that. We did run a survey to gather input from these various constituencies across the state, and AIR ran that survey for us. We are very excited that we have obtained 56,000 responses to our survey, which is an enormous response rate, and so we're very excited about that. Preliminary results from those surveys have been shared with the work groups this last week, and they were brought through that information. All of that data is in the possession of AIR and is controlled by the IRB agreement that AIR has with the individuals who completed the survey. So everyone who completed the survey agreed to a certain IRB contract terms as part of entering into and completing the survey. So the data will be governed by the IRB agreement. So while a great amount of that survey will be available to us, all that information will have to be controlled vis-a-vis that IRB agreement, if that helps answer your question.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions?
Yeah, let me follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner, thank you for the background. There are two sources of information. I guess you're familiar with the research agreement that you just referenced. There are two sources there. One is the massive amount of surveys collected sets, and if that information will be shared, will there, with the legislature, will be, there be that opportunity, and can you give us some sense of timing on that? Second part to this is that attributing the CARES Act dollars, some $33 million, there was a request by the commissioner to school districts to make application for those dollars. So there's interest, I think, from legislators, I know that, in what they requested for funding and whether those items were one-time or recurring items that would be helpful for the legislature to understand relative to additional CARES Act money allocations or future needs that need to be addressed.
Great. So two things. Yeah, so I appreciate that question. So then what I can tell you is relative to the first question, relative to the survey information, again, we've already shared information with the work groups. Ultimately, all of that information that's being shared with the work groups will be made public. I believe even there was a third-party organization that already published the information that was shared with the work groups. So that information is absolutely available to the legislature. And if the legislature desires, you know, at the completion of the START work, we're happy to come before the legislative committee and present that information to them so they can get a good comprehensive look at it, if that's helpful to them. Relative to the ESSER funds, last Wednesday, so not this week, but last week on Wednesday, we made those grant applications available to all of our school districts. About 189 school districts or LEAs will be applying for those. As of 2 days ago, we had 3 of the grants have been approved, 4 had been submitted, and we're waiting approval. 47 of the districts had started the grant application process, which means that they had, at some point, they logged into the grant application and began to fill out their application to access those funds. And 135 districts had not yet taken any action with respect to accessing those grant funds. But we will continue to monitor the school's access to that. At the completion of that grant, we have reporting responsibilities back to the federal government, which I think is responsive to your question, Senator Kahn, that will categorize the various grant activities that the schools have engaged in. So we will have visibility into how the schools deployed that money in response to the Corona 19 virus. And we're happy to share that information as well once those grant funds have been used by the districts.
Madam Chair, if I might,
yes,
just thank the commissioner for his response there. And Commissioner, if you can make available those links that we might access today, or that just give us some sense of down the road, and you can just do that with some communication back with the budget assistant office. But
can I just want to be clear that I'm responsive. Which is this the link to some of the START data?
Yes, you said that there was a summary available. And
just to be clear, so what I've heard is that a third party had published that information. I can tell you I personally have not seen that, but I can go look for it and see if it's available. But my understanding is that somebody had published it, but I've not myself seen it. But so if there is a public link for that and I can find it, I will absolutely share it with the committee.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, just to clarify, yes, at the transparency of both of these sources of information that I'm just inquiring of the commissioner, and I hear from his answer that as the information is available, he'll communicate with us that it is, and it will save the legislature from needing to make similar inquiries by trying to make use of data that's already been collected. Thank you.
Okay. Ben. Great.
Thank you. Thank you. Further questions for Commissioner Edelwood?
Or Director Davis, relative to the SLDS grant.
Yes, either. I hear no further questions, and thank you Commissioner, and Ms. Davis for being available to us today.
Great. Thank you so much, everyone.
Madam Chair, I would move approval of this item.
And Representative Kahn moves approval. Do we have a second?
Ford seconds.
And Representative Ford seconds the motion. Further discussion of the item? Seeing no further discussion, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll. Thank you.
Representative Ford.
Yes.
Representative Weiler votes yes. Representative Hennessy.
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy.
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Senator Susi.
Yes.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
Madam Chair, the vote is 10-0.
Thank you, Representative Weiler. Motion passes 10-0. And let's move on to tab 7. And this is a Department of Health and Human Services item. People have questions about this item?
Madam Chair, this is Erin Hennessy. I do have a couple questions about this one.
Okay. Is there someone available from Department of Health and Human Services?
Yes, this is Karen Rounds, and I'm also here with the commissioner.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Rounds, and commissioner, for being here. And Representative Hennessy has questions about this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here to answer my questions. I have questions about the general funds that are being removed from behavioral health. It's $1 million. Could you go into more detail about what programs will not be done because we're removing those funds?
Sure. I'm actually going to ask Katya Fox to take that question. She should also be on the line.
Good morning. This is Katya Fox, Director, Division for Behavioral Health. And in that item, you see the transfer of $1 million out of Children's Behavioral Health. Those funds were appropriated as part of the budget and were requested by the department for wraparound services for children as well as for children's mobile crisis. What happened after those funds were approved in the budget, as it went through the budget process, is that the SB 14, which is the system of care, the bill that was passed and approved, and the funding for which is in HB 4, which invested a significant amount of dollars into the children's system of care, including expansion of wraparound services, as well as statewide integrated children's mobile crisis. And so the $1 million that you see there is was set aside, and that was an initial investment, and the additional funding, which is not being touched as part of this, is going forward. The account that $1 million is in is a lapsing account. And due to COVID and our broader approach in having a significant more investment, we were unable to take on the RFP process for the limited dollars of, and I will never call $1 million limited, but we weren't able to encumber those dollars. There are no current services that are going to be cut as a result of this transfer. In fact, if this $1 million isn't transferred to cover other areas of the department, it lapses. So it's not going to be used either way for children's behavioral health. Again, we have the additional funding that was significant, and those RFPs and all the process for those programs is now getting underway in more a concentrated way because we have been able to stabilize the mental health system and children's behavioral health system as it had to pivot to address COVID.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Fox. Can you tell me the funds that you're speaking of that you are sending out RFPs for now? Do those include for the Children's Mobile Crisis Unit, or has that already been set up? Could you just expand on that, please?
Sure, sure. Right now, in the system, we have three mobile crisis teams that are for adults, and there has been some expansion in Children's Mobile Crisis, but it's not been a statewide model. That is the intent, and we have the funding, and we're moving forth this summer, drafting that RFP and then posting it by hopefully by early fall, as we also concurrently post some of the other services that were part of the SB 14 bill for system of care. So it's all a work in progress. We were also able to hire some staff as a result of the SB 14 provisions and the funding that was provided in HB 4. Those staff members onboarded remotely, and that's going to help us as we move forward in getting these programs stood up and being able to have those services available.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions of the department concerning this item? I will remind people to use the star, the five star, and that will, then that way I can be alerted if there's a hand up. But hearing no other requests for questions of the department, I will ask for a motion on this item.
I would move the item.
Senator D'Alessandro moves, and
I'll second it.
And Senator Rosenwald seconds. Any further discussion of this item? Hearing none, I will ask Representative Weiler to call the roll.
Representative Ford.
Yes.
Representative Weiler votes yes. Representative Hennessy.
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy.
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Senator Susie.
Yes.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
Madam Chair, the vote is 10 to 0.
Thank you, Representative Weiler. The motion passes 10 to 0. And moving on to the Department of Corrections, this is tab 8, and we have an item from the Department of Corrections, a transfer of $5.3 million in general funds. Is there discussion of this item? Are there questions for the department?
I wonder, Madam Chair, if someone from the department could go over the additional piece of information that they sent us that deals with the housing, the hiring and the vacancies, and let us know where we're moving in that direction. If someone could address that.
Okay. Is there someone here from the Department of Corrections?
Helen Hanks has her hand up.
Oh, yes, Commissioner.
Good morning, everyone. Actually, this is Ben Jean, the Assistant Commissioner. I think the phone system flagged me as the Commissioner. I appreciate its gesture, but she's on vacation. So,
oh, good. I'm sure she deserves a vacation, I'm sure. And, yes, Senator D'Alessandro had some questions about this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner Jean. Ben, you sent us an additional piece of information regarding the staffing at the institution. And am I correct in reading this that currently there are still 131 vacancies?
Yes, Senator, absolutely correct. Yeah, I sent this in response to a few questions that the committee had raised. But, yeah, we're still actively recruiting for 131 security positions, 103 of those being corrections officers.
So the overtime is still the big situation here.
Yeah. The overtime obviously is still is large because it's covering those vacancies.
Right. And a further question, if I might, Madam Chair.
Yes, please, Senator D'Alessandro.
Now, Ben, the new contract that you have signed. Do you have enough money within this transfer to cover that? To cover those expenses.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for the question. Yes, absolutely, we do.
And just one last question.
Yes.
We have noticed over the years, budget after budget after budget, that the overtime expenses continue to rise. Is there something in place, Ben, at the present time, to expedite the recruitment situation with regard to corrections officers, so you can reduce the overtime, have more people, and eliminate the stress on your workforce in terms of this forced overtime?
Yes, thank you again. We've been recruiting for many years, like you know, and it's been quite, kind of a struggle to get enough people in. We're still using the M5 marketing firm for recruiting. We recently worked with Police Standards and Training to create a certification bridging program for police officers to become corrections officers in almost an expedited certification fashion to make it more attractive. We also looked at what happens is many people start as corrections officers and then promote into other position types within the DOC, and we also work with police standards to allow people to maintain their CO certification to help cover some of the shifts as, in theory, part-time corrections officers at that point. But we're still actively recruiting. I know the commissioner worked with Employment Security to we're posted as one of the hot jobs for people searching for jobs. But at the same time, we're still dealing with the retirement side. So as you know, the Northern Hampshire Correctional Facility was open 20 years ago this year, and many of the positions that were hired for that are all currently eligible or will be within the next few years to retire. So oftentimes, even as we bring in new people, we have the equal rate of retirements going out. So we do continue to actively recruit. There were some pay raises in the last couple of years that are hopefully will make the entry pay more attractive. But even so, we're still competing against other law enforcement agencies as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ben. Thank you for that. But what it appears to be is we're still in a zero-sum game here, and this has been going on for a number of years. And the only thing that we can see is overtime expenses keep going up and up and up, and you're making these transfers. And I think it just puts a lot of pressure on your workforce.
No, I agree. I would be much happier if the vacancy was zero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you for the great work that you're doing over at the prison and recognizing the fact that nothing's easy in this life.
Thank you, sir.
Are there further questions from other members of the committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Kahn.
Yes, Senator Kahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Questions from Senator D'Alessandro certainly share his remarks and the response from the Assistant Commissioner. Thank you. Good luck in those efforts. My question is related to COVID-related overtime. we've seen the news that the state facilities were affected with outbreaks, that officer absentee was noted. So I'm wondering if that is a part of the display and the additional information you provided, and if some of those costs are eligible for reimbursement from various CARES Act allocations.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for the question. The there are COVID-related costs of overtime in these numbers. I don't have an exact amount here at the time. We're seeking ways to get reimbursement for COVID-related expenses wherever we can. So if that's available, we will. I mean, we did get some impact from COVID. Knocking on wood here, the DOC has been very successful in keeping from having an outbreak. But we did have some staff members that did get COVID, which obviously put them out as they recovered. And then in the first phase of when COVID was really starting to spread, we had a lot of quarantining of staff who had traveled rather than having them come into work. So there's definitely some COVID-related expenses in that overtime, and we're doing our best to track it and seek reimbursement for it where and if it's available.
Thank you for your response, Assistant Commissioner and Madam Chair. I think it's important that as people continue to work with Gopher and to articulate that our state budget is where it's at, we know, and the availability of these funds to COVID-related funds to be able to cover our institutional overtime expenses ought to be something that we should be able to cover.
Thank you for those remarks, Senator Khan. Mr. Jean, I had a question. All of the correctional officers are receiving the additional stipend. Is that correct?
Corrections officers will receive the stipend. We're still, I believe, waiting to receive those funds, and then it'll be distributed. But yes, corrections officers, probation parole officers, and other positions that are identified as corrections line personnel, which means they work inside the secure facility and have direct contact with residents as part of their employment.
Thank you. And for how long will they receive that stipend?
My understanding is that's an eight-week stipend, and I've also been updated from our director of finance that we have just received the funds, too. So we'll be working on processing those payments.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for that information. Any further questions for Mr. Jean? Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. And do we have a motion on this item?
I would move the item.
Senator D'Alessandro moved, and Senator Khan second the item. And further discussion? Hearing none, could I ask Representative Wyler to call the roll?
Representative Ford?
Yes.
Representative Wyler votes yes. Representative Hennessy?
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy?
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Senator Susi?
Yes.
Senator Khan?
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald?
Yes.
Senator Morse?
Yes.
Representative Wallner?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the vote is 10-0.
Thank you, Representative Wyler. The vote, the item passes 10-0. And now moving on to our final tab, tab nine, it's a regular business. And this is a item from the Department of Administrative Services. Do committee members have questions? Hearing no questions, do we have a motion on this item?
I would move the item.
Senator D'Alessandro moves the item.
Second.
And I think that was Senator Rosenwald.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And discussion of this item? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Ford.
Yes.
Representative Weiler votes yes. Representative Hennessy.
Yes.
Representative Lovejoy.
Yes.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Senator Susi.
Yes.
Senator Kahn.
Yes.
Senator Rosenwald.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
Madam Chair, the vote is 10 to 0.
Item passes 10 to 0. Thank you. And let's move on to informational items. Do we have items that we would like to have department people to come up and talk to us about them? I believe, I know that the Department of Health and Human Services has an item here that they are going to do a presentation about. That is item 2125. And other than that one, are there other items we would like to have brought off the agenda and talked about? Okay. I don't hear anyone else.
Madam Chair, Senator Kahn, sorry. While they're doing that, maybe they could address 124 as well.
Okay, 124.
The additional,
okay,
124.
Okay, they'll.
Medicaid reimbursement.
Okay. So I, hearing no other requests, I will ask the department to come up and give us their presentation on item 125, which is the 10-year plan for mental health services, and then also to comment on item number 124. These are just informational items. We don't need to vote on them. And I do want to remind people, I think that this morning or maybe last night, we also received the dashboard from the department in our email. So I don't know if people have questions about that. But while we have the department up, if there are questions about the dashboard, we could probably also address those. So I don't know who's here from the department.
Good morning, Madam Chair. This is Karen Rounds. Katya Fox is going to do the presentation on item 125. But regarding item 124, that is the enhanced Medicaid FMAP that we are accepting across the department. There are several accounting units that Medicaid is budgeted in, so that's increasing the FMAP in all of those accounting units. And that's what that item is. I'm not sure if
I do have a question. I do have a question about that one.
Sure.
So that one will mean that we will actually have some additional general funds available. And I wondered what the department's plan is for those additional general funds.
The likely plan is to use them for increased caseload.
And where are the increased caseload? Are they in Medicaid?
Yes, because there are requirements right now in Medicaid that we cannot remove any Medicaid clients. So our caseloads are up because of that, and also because there are additional applicants to Medicaid. So we do anticipate that that's how those funds will be used. Are there further questions about 124? Okay, so hearing none, then let's move on to 125 and have Ms. Fox do the presentation. Thank you.
So good morning again for the record. I'm Katya Fox, Director for the Division for Behavioral Health for the Department. And what you see before you for this item is that we were required to submit to fiscal a plan for the development of transitional housing beds. In HB4, there was $5 million set aside for the purpose of funding the 40 new transitional housing beds. And these were specifically targeted for that population that is difficult to and complex to find adequate and supported housing. And so as part of that, I just wanted to state that this was a result of about a year and a half ago when the 10-year plan was established, the new 10-year plan. And this was an opportunity for us to really prioritize in the 14 recommendations that open up the 10-year plan of what we felt needed to be done in the two-year biennium. And during the budget process, we were able to secure some funding for some different projects. Some of them we talked about earlier for the system of care for children, and that was very much part of the 10-year plan. In particular, transitional housing is a big need, and we have had a little bit of expansion, but not much of an expansion. In the previous biennium, we were able to expand a little bit. Right now, we have 74 beds that we fund, and those include the transitional housing that I think most people are aware of that is in the Hugh Gallon complex, as well as beds in Bethlehem, Bradford, and Nashua. We just, because of, again, COVID, we had to quickly make sure that we had the services in place that we currently have and secure those 74 beds. So we are in the process of going through contracting for those beds, and that will be coming forth before Governor and Council by the end of the month. With the money that was afforded in this, and our plan is that we are going to, this is somewhat new, to receive money for construction. Typically, we receive money for services and to procure for services. And this is a little bit different with, again, for construction. One of the things that is going on at the same time as this in implementing our plan, a key component is to seek what is known as an IMD waiver. And an IMD is the Medicaid Institutions for Mental Disease exclusion that requires that if we want to have a facility that has more than 16 of these types of beds, we need to get approval from the federal government, from CMS. So I just checked in with Henry Lippman, our Medicaid director, because we had started that process of seeking that waiver. And again, because of the need to focus on shoring up our safety net providers, we haven't been able to move that forward as quickly as we had hoped. But that's a key component, and will be going on at the same time that we are going through this plan and implementing the plan as called for in the law. And as you can see, the law requires that we have the plan for constructing the beds by January 1st. And then they'll be operational by June 1st of 2021. So So we look forward to the opportunity to be able to use these dollars to meet that need, which is detailed in the 10-year plan and really falls into the category, several categories of the 10-year plan in ensuring that people, as they are ready to transition out of New Hampshire Hospital, actually have some place to go. And I believe our commissioner, in her former role as CEO of New Hampshire Hospital, has spoken quite extensively about this and before legislative committees about those individuals who, but for housing, could be in the community. And this is a great opportunity for us to be able to achieve that.
Thank you, Ms. Fox.
And for that, I'll take any questions.
Questions? Do members of the committee have questions?
Madam Chair, I have tried to raise my hand.
Oh, is this Senator Rosenwald? Sorry.
Thank you. I do have a question for Katja, if I could. And Katja, thank you. And thank you, Karen and Commissioner Chibonet, for being here. When we were working on the budget and trying to implement the 10-year mental health plan for it, we worked very hard with Commissioner Chibonet when she was in her former role to fund these transitional beds. And at the time, we knew from her that there were somewhere around 40 people at New Hampshire Hospital who didn't really need hospital level of care, but were there because there was no safe supported place in the community. So it seems to me like we already knew that those 40 transitional housing beds would be the priority would be to open them for people transitioning out of New Hampshire Hospital. So I guess my question is why the department undertook this work again, and I'm looking at the plan overview paragraph. Wasn't this something that we had already known?
Thank you for the question. This is Commissioner Chibonet. We actually worked hard even before this on standing up new transitional housing beds. If you recall, the transitional housing beds in Nashua, we opened those 14 beds after I had started at New Hampshire Hospital, so maybe just 2 years ago. We also expanded transitional housing beds into Bradford. So the work to expand transitional housing beds has been going on since I started at New Hampshire Hospital, so 3 or 4 years ago. I've lost track of time. COVID does that to me. So I think it's been about 3 years. This was further expansion of those beds and of transitional housing beds or community residences. And, you know, as much as COVID has delayed a lot of programs for a variety of reasons, from everything from recruitment of staff to being able to stand up a program that is able to admit people, all of those issues around COVID significantly impact our ability to move forward, because congregating people in a residential home of any kind puts people at higher risk, because anytime you put 6, 7, 8 people that can't socially distance, it creates a problem. And we've had actual COVID cases at some of our transitional housing beds around the state. So, you know, delaying that stand up, and, you know, our intent originally was to RFP transitional housing beds with the RFP that just went out. So I think we are well on our way. I think that the transitional housing beds that are going to be stood up in the coming months are going to look different. I think that it's going to be a variety of things, from expansion of some of our community residences that we currently have to probably some new buildings. I think that there's a lot of good discussion around and a lot of interest around expanding this program area that is needed, because the New Hampshire Hospital waiting to discharge list runs from about 45 right up to 65 or 70, depending on the time of year.
Thank you.
Further questions for the department? Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner and Ms. Rounds and Ms. Foss for being with us today. And we do have the dashboard. Thank you for providing that to us. And do you have any questions on the dashboard?
I just found it a little hard to read. The printing is just so minuscule that with these older eyes, it's very tough to get to digest some of those numbers.
Thank you, Senator. This is the commissioner. Our plan in the coming months is to really redo that dashboard. We've been relocated over at the EOC for several months now. So once we all get back to Brown and get back to business as usual, we will revamp that dashboard. So hopefully it'll be easier for you to read.
Well, thank you very much, Commissioner. And I think there should come a time at our meetings when you actually run through that dashboard for us, because the discrepancies that appear need amplification. And you and your staff are the only ones that can do that.
Great. Thank you. Maybe we can plan that for the July meeting. Maybe we'll plan that the department, if they have the time to go through the dashboard with us. That might be helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's a great suggestion.
Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for all the work you and your staff have been doing. Very difficult work and difficult time, so we appreciate it. Any other things that we want to discuss with the Department of Health and Human Services?
Senator Rosenwald has a question.
Yes, Senator Rosenwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question on the dashboard. I noticed that the number of nursing home residents had increased, and so my question is, are all of our nursing homes in the state admitting new residents now, or do we have any that have stopped new admissions because of the COVID pandemic?
Thank you for the question. This is the commissioner. We have quite a few nursing homes that are not admitting currently. Any facility that is in a current outbreak with COVID are not able to do admissions during their COVID. That number has ranged anywhere from 12 facilities right up to 19 facilities. And then there are a variety of nursing homes that just have decided that due to the risk of introducing new people into their population, that they are not going to do new admissions. So we are hoping that as we start easing some restrictions, that they will start doing more admissions, because it really does create a backlog, because people that are in hospitals waiting to go to nursing homes are not able to go, so then they're taking up a hospital bed. So there is quite a few nursing homes in the state that are currently not doing admissions.
Thank you.
Any further questions for the commissioner, Ms. Round? Okay, seeing none, thank you again for being with us. We appreciate the time. And if there are no other items on the agenda that committee members would like to discuss, I think the last thing we have is setting a date for our next meeting. And we've been meeting on the second Friday of the month, and that in July would be July 10th, and we meet at 8 a.m. I'm sorry, 10 a.m. No, we won't meet at 8. We'll meet at 10 a.m. on July 10th. And any other items of business to come before the fiscal committee?
Just a quickie, Madam Chair,
yes.
If I might. I understand that Perry Plummer is leaving state employment. I would like to commend him for the great work that he's done in orchestrating the activities dealing with this pandemic. He's been a valuable resource, a wonderful state employee, and I think a real credit to our state. So I wish him the very, very best in whatever he plans to do. And it'll be tough to replace Perry Plummer, I can tell you that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. And I know Mr. Plummer has been a valuable state employee, and he will be missed, I'm sure. So
I will echo those comments as well.
Yes.
Thank you, Kim.
I think the whole committee would agree that he's been quite a value for our state, and we really appreciate all that he's done for us. And seeing no other items to come before the fiscal committee, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.